facial recognition technology used to belong to the world of science fiction, often portrayed in futuristic societies along with flying cars and robots. But as algorithms and artificial intelligence have improved, this technology has become more and more effective. We're seeing it used in more and more places now. It has the potential to enhance security by requiring your face to gain access to important information, but it comes with big concerns over surveillance and privacy when pictures of our faces are already all over social media and the internet at large. Our next guest has been covering these issues surrounding facial recognition technology. In a new book, she tracks its development and potential for misuse. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the current state of facial recognition technology, how it is, what it's being used? What do you think of the idea that somebody with a picture of your face can access lots and lots of information about you? Do you use some kind of facial recognition, say, on your smartphone? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Kashmir Hill is a technology reporter at the New York Times. Her new book is called Your Face Belongs to Us, A Secretive Startup's Quest to End Privacy as We Know It. Kashmir, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
I want to start at the end of your book, Kashmir, because it's clear this is not a hypothetical technology that may be out there some way. Facial recognition is being used. Give us a sense of who's using it and how widely it's being used.
So face recognition is widely available now. Police are using it to investigate crimes, to identify criminal suspects. Stores are using this to identify known shoplifters, to kind of intercept them, kick them out. Madison Square Garden, the events venue in New York, has been using it to keep out not just security threats, but lawyers who work for firms that have sued it. And increasingly, facial recognition technology that kind of searches the internet for a face is available to normal people with subscription services on the internet and even free sites.
Now, I want to take it back to the start of the story. You get a tip. Now, there was a point, of course, where this wasn't being used. You got a tip. Bring us into the start of the story for you as a reporter.
Yeah, so it was the fall of 2019. I got a tip from a public records researcher who had been sending inquiries to police departments around the country, asking them, hey, which facial recognition companies are you using and how much are you paying for it? And at that point, you know, we knew that police used face recognition technology to try to find people in kind of criminal mugshot databases or in driver's license databases. But as far as we knew, it didn't work that well. The algorithms weren't very powerful. It wasn't really that reliable of a tool. But I get this tip that that some police departments are using a new tool called Clearview AI. And the company claimed to have scraped billions of people's faces from the public internet, including social media sites, and developed this algorithm that worked with something like 98.6% accuracy to identify people. And when I first heard about it, I thought, oh my gosh, can this be real? But the public records request that this researcher had gotten from the Atlanta Police Department included a legal memo from a very high profile lawyer named Paul Clement, who said he had used the tool with lawyers at his firm, that it worked very reliably. He said that there were already hundreds of police departments that were using it, and he had written this legal memo to basically reassure police departments who wanted to try the tool that they wouldn't be breaking state and federal privacy laws.
Tell us how, in its current state and over the last couple of years, it works. I start with a picture of somebody, maybe somebody I saw on the street, or if I'm a police officer, a security camera picture. Then what happens with that picture?
Yeah. So when I first started looking into Clearview AI, the company did not want to talk to me. They're kind of avoiding me, and there wasn't a lot of information about them. So I ended up going to police officers and finding police officers had used the tool. I talked to one of them, a detective in Gainesville, Florida, named Nick Ferrara, and he described how this worked. He said that, you know, he got a 30-day free trial to Clearview AI, and he had a stack of kind of unsolved cases on his desk. He was a financial crimes detective. So these are photos of people that are standing in an ATM or at a bank counter. And he started running these people's photos through Clearview AI, and it would lead him to other photos of them on the internet. And so he would find their Facebook profiles or their Venmo accounts. And so it was, he said, shockingly good at, you know, taking a photo of an unknown person and leading you to their name or their social media profile. And he loved the tool. He said it worked even when somebody was, you know, looking away from the camera or wearing glasses or wearing a hat. And he said, I'd be this company's spokesperson if they'd have me.
Talking to Kashmir Hill from the New York Times, author of the new book, Your Face Belongs to Us, A Secretive Startup's Quest to End Privacy as We Know It. You could join in with your questions, maybe your concerns about this kind of facial recognition system at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Kashmir, you recount decades-long efforts to have some sort of computerized facial recognition system, major universities, some big companies we've heard of try to get into it, Google, Facebook, things like that. And then there's this Clearview, which looks from the outside like this fly-by-night company of, at best, quirky characters. Give us a taste of what Clearview is like and why they were the ones who ended up cracking this and selling it, their services, to police departments and maybe others.
Yeah, I mean, when I was first talking to this detective and other officers who described to me this really astounding tool, I thought, wow, how is it that some, you know, random startup has built this? They must have a technological genius who works there, who is, you know, able to do something that the big technology giants and even the government hadn't been able to do. But then when I began looking into the company, they were, as you say, quite quirky. You know, they actually initially tried to deter my reporting. They put an alert on my own face so that these police officers, when they were talking to me, they were really excited at first, and then they stopped. And I discovered that when they ran my own photo to show me what the results were like, they were getting calls from the company telling them, hey, you're not supposed to be talking to a reporter, or stop talking to her, which I think they had done to try to deter my reporting, but it only made me more interested. And eventually I found out, you know, it really was this kind of ragtag crew of individuals, a really small company based in New York, two primary founders, somebody who had been in New York politics for a long time and in media circles named Richard Schwartz, and then the technical co-founder, Juan Tan Tat, who is a pretty young guy, had always been interested in computers and technology, grew up in Australia, dropped out of college at 19 years old to move to, you know, halfway around the world to San Francisco to chase the tech boom. But when I started looking into his history, you know, what he had done before building this astounding technology was Facebook quizzes and iPhone games and an app called Trump Hair that would put the ex-president's hair on people's, you know, heads and photos. And I was just scratching my head. I mean, how did he do this? And what I would come to find out is that, you know, what Clearview did wasn't really a technological breakthrough. He was relying on open source technology and kind of facial recognition algorithms shared on GitHub. And I would discover that companies like Google and Facebook had developed something like Clearview AI internally years earlier and decided that it was too dangerous to release. And what Clearview's breakthrough was ethical arbitrage. They were just willing to do what was possible, whereas other companies had decided they didn't want to do that. They thought that the risks were too great of releasing that kind of technology.
We'll get into those risks in just a bit. I want to talk about the source of photos here, because this is one of the challenges of this technology, as you read over the decades. We need lots and lots, millions, maybe billions of pictures, including people's faces, to have this stuff work in an interesting way. They harvested them in some, I guess, ethically questionable ways. How did they get their pictures?
Yeah, I mean, one of the first places that Juan Tan Tat told me he got photos from was Venmo.com. And Venmo is the social payment site. A lot of people that first start using Venmo, when they sign up, they're pushed to be public by default. And so Venmo actually had this feature on their website that showed real-time transactions that were happening on their network. And so, you know, it would show Rob is paying Kashmir if we both had our apps set to public. And so we actually had this scraper that would hit Venmo.com every few seconds and download the photos there and the profile URL. And he got millions of faces just from Venmo alone by doing that. And so it was really just the fact that a lot of our faces are out there on the internet. And a lot of these companies like Facebook and LinkedIn and Venmo have pushed us to kind of put our faces out there alongside our names out on the internet. And he was really taking advantage of that. In some cases, he was designing these scrapers himself. And he also told me that he would buy kind of databases of faces from other scrapers and that he sometimes didn't even know their names and he would pay for it in cryptocurrency. So it was really just kind of this race for him to get as many photos as he could. When I first wrote about Clearview AI in 2020, they had 3 billion faces. Now the company claims to have 40 billion faces in their database.
We're talking to New York Times reporter Kashmir Hill about facial recognition technology. It's real. It's being used. She tells that story in her new book, Your Face Belongs to Us, a secretive startup's quest to end privacy as we know it. Coming up, what could go wrong? You could join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think the rules and laws should be for facial recognition technology in public? If your face is on Facebook or Venmo or whatever social site, do you think it's okay that it gets used in these facial recognition systems? Should police use these? Should everyday people have access to facial recognition technology? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with Kashmir Hill, technology reporter at the New York Times. She's talking about facial recognition technology and her new book, Your Face Belongs to Us, a secretive startup's quest to end privacy as we know it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about what you're hearing here? Do you think your face is on the internet maybe too much? Do you worry about how much your kids have their faces online? Who, if anyone, should use this technology that lets you take a photo of someone and learn everything about them? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Kashmir, you talk to a lot of people, the ACLU and many others, concerned about how these technologies are used, if they're used at all. First of all, let's talk about when the government has it, when police departments have it. You've reported just recently about a false arrest of an 8-month pregnant woman. I think it was in Detroit, based on facial recognition technology. Talk about how the concerns about how this is being used.
Yeah, I mean, civil liberties groups have a lot of different concerns about the use of facial recognition technology. I mean, one of them is just if we are going to use it, how big is the database that we search through? And, you know, should they be using kind of smaller databases just for the city, just for the state, or a database like Clearview AI's, where, you know, you're searching for a criminal amongst 40 billion faces, you know, including lots of people who couldn't have possibly committed the crime. And then what happens, you know, if you get a doppelganger? And so that is another concern, is that, well, once you do get, you know, possible hits, do investigators fall prey to something called automation bias, which is, you know, the computer says this person may have done it. And do you then just go out and arrest that person right away? How much more investigating do you do? And that is what happened in Detroit. There was a crime committed. It was a car robbery, carjacking, and police ran a photo of somebody who was attached to the crime. And one of the top hits was Portia Woodruff, a woman who lived in Detroit. And so police showed her photo to the victim of the crime. And he said, you know, in a 6-pack photo lineup. And he said, yeah, that does look like the person. He agreed with the computer essentially and said, yeah, that does look like the person who was involved in the crime. And so they went and arrested her. And she was 8 months pregnant. She spent the day being, you know, interrogated. She was charged. She had to hire a lawyer. She went to the hospital as soon as she was released because she was so stressed out by being arrested for a crime that she did not commit. It can be really devastating for people who get arrested for this reason. And so this is something that activists really worry about as well, that, you know, we put too much credence in what the computer says. And then there's just a concern about, you know, how often it's used, for what kind of crimes, and the fear that maybe the government starts putting facial recognition algorithms on all of the surveillance cameras and creates this kind of state of real-time face tracking. I think that is the kind of nightmare scenario for a lot of civil liberties groups.
Yeah, and no surprise, China heavily investing in using this kind of technology. But one case that struck me was in London, in the UK. Can you talk about, it's not a case of, hey, we're taking a picture of somebody suspected of committing a crime, running it through the system. They're just out in the street videoing everybody?
Yeah, I mean, there's such a range of deployment of facial recognition around the world. So in Moscow, there are real-time, facial recognition programs running on the surveillance cameras. Same in China. In the UK, they're not quite there yet, but they're essentially doing kind of trial balloons, or in this case, trial mobile vans. So they will send vans out onto the street with facial recognition cameras on the roof, and they'll park it somewhere and then search the crowds for anybody who's wanted by the courts. And they've done this several times now. And yeah, they'll just pick people up because of, in one case, it was some kind of traffic infraction. And the Metropolitan Police wouldn't tell me exactly what the traffic infraction was, but whether it was, you know, speeding or unpaid parking tickets. But yeah, I mean, they just picked that person off the street. And so civil liberties groups in the UK are really worried about that. And there's one called Big Brother Watch. And anytime they hear about the deployment of one of these vans, they kind of show up with signs and try to warn people and say, is this the world we want?
Kashmir Hill is with us talking about her new book, Your Face Belongs to Us, A Secretive Startup's Quest to End Privacy as We Know It. Kashmir, that's official use. There's debate within Clearview. Some of the owners are like, hey, let's just sell this to police departments. A key investor saying, no, everybody needs this. We need to sell this to everybody. Can you talk about the concerns if, you know, you and I and everybody can start using this kind of facial recognition system?
Yeah, in that case, there's two buckets of concerns, right? We could imagine stores just knowing who we are as we walk in the door. And what's unique about the face is it could be this token that unlocks everything there is to know about you, right? It could link you to your online dossier so that we could be tracked in the real world the same way we're tracked online, where maybe the store knows, you know, how much you have to spend or what your interests are or who you work for or what your political leanings are. And that's why I was so disturbed to see the way that Madison Square Garden started using facial recognition technology in the last year. They were essentially discriminating against lawyers who worked at law firms that had lawsuits against them. They said, you're not allowed in here anymore. You can't come to Knicks games. You can't come to Rangers games. You know, you can't come to concerts until your law firm drops its suit. And so you could really imagine other business owners potentially using it in that way. The other concern is just how we might use it as individuals. As I said at the outset, there are now face search engines that are on the internet that anyone can use. And so you can imagine the different scenarios here. Maybe protesters outside of a Planned Parenthood. A woman walks out, they can take her picture and possibly know who she is. Or you're at the pharmacy and you're buying something sensitive, you're buying hemorrhoid cream, and somebody standing next to you thinks it's funny, takes your photo, figures out who you are, and kind of blasts it out onto the internet just because they're trolling you. I actually think about this every time I'm at dinner and I'm having a really sensitive conversation where I'm in earshot of strangers. You know, what if they suddenly got interested in what I'm talking about? They just kind of take my photo and they find out who I am, and all of a sudden they understand the context of what I'm saying. There's just so many times that we are out in public where we're just protected by being anonymous, by being surrounded by people who don't know who we are. And that could potentially go away if facial recognition becomes very ubiquitous or very widely used.
In our last couple of minutes, Kashmir, there have been lawsuits. There have been some efforts at the state and federal level to have laws to define how this works. What is the current state of legality when it comes to these facial recognition systems?
So there's really nothing in the United States that applies at the federal level. There's a few states who have relevant laws. Illinois has this very unique law that says that companies need to get people's consent to use their biometrics, including their face print. So it kind of prohibits it, this kind of use outside of government use. There are a few state privacy laws that give you the ability to access your information and get it deleted when from a company's database. So if you live in California, for example, you can go to Clearview AI and say, hey, I don't want to be in your database, delete me. Wisconsin does not yet have such a law, but there is a bill that's been discussed there that would give Wisconsin the ability with I don't know, what do you call people who live in Wisconsin?
Wisconsinites,
the ability to do that. But yeah, at this point, we just don't have very strong privacy laws in this country. So there isn't a lot of protection against this.
In our last few moments, this story is a moving target. The book is out. You're still reporting on it. What do you have your eye on next?
I mean, one thing I'm really looking at is whether we can get some laws passed. I have been kind of traveling around the country and talking about this, and I found audiences are pretty outraged that they don't have control over whether their face ends up in one of these databases. And so kind of just keeping a track on of that, you know, whether we get some kind of privacy legislation that moves, whether at the federal level or in more states.
Kashmir, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Kashmir Hill, technology reporter at the New York Times. She was with us today to talk about facial recognition technology. It is out there. It is being used. Her new book is called Your Face Belongs to Us, a secretive startup's quest to end privacy as we know it.